Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. The show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard. It is also heard on ipmnation.com or .org, I can't remember which. And this is a 24-hour online news service that comes out of mostly talk and news that comes out of Concord, New Hampshire. And it's heard every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Also, Podomatic. We upload most of the shows as well as other classic interviews from the 70s and 80s, etc. And on YouTube, our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution. So that's the various entities that show this. And we hope to be adding to that as time goes on. You can also visit our website, campconstitution.net. Take a look at our Sam Blumenfeld archives and learn about our incredible summer camp. This will be our 10th annual family camp from August 5th to the 11th in Berkshires of Massachusetts. And like every year, we have some incredible guest instructors. And this year, we might have a real all-star cast of guest instructors. Mrs. Chris Ann Hall, Dr. Duke Pesta, who else? We have Lord Christopher Monckton, John McManus, and anyway, definitely worth checking out. So visit the website, and that website's campconstitution.net. Well, folks, just a couple of days ago was the 200th anniversary of one of the most vilest men ever to exist. His name was Karl Marx. He was born in Germany. He was actually from a upper middle class background. His father was an attorney. As a young man, he kind of lived off his parents while he was in college, and his father lost money as he got older and he was sick. But Marx, the sponge and parasite, continued to get money from him. And there is some evidence to suggest that Marx was a Christian at one point. He aspired to be a poet initially. And there's a book about Marx called Marx and Satan, written by Richard Rumbrand, who also wrote a book called Tortured for Christ. He was a Romanian pastor, I believe, and he spent about 20 years in a communist prison, communist inspired by his filthy Communist Manifesto, which I'll get into. And what makes this more upsetting to me is that the Communist Manifesto today is the most widely read booklet or book in colleges. And they're not reading it, folks, to criticize it. They're reading it because they agree with it. Camp Constitution, over the years, we have classes on the Communist Manifesto, and we plan to have one this year. And we go into the 10 planks and Marx's devilish muddle, as he once referred to his writings. But Marx was a rather loathsome individual, in addition to the filthy publication, the Communist Manifesto. It's interesting, just a couple of days ago, Michael Moore, the millionaire so-called film, he's really a propagandist. He makes Lenny Riefenstahl look like an amateur. He makes movies to promote socialism and globalism and gun control and socialized medicine, etc. And he was praising Marx to the hilt in his tweets, and I happened to read his tweets and made a few postings. So it doesn't surprise me that he identifies with Marx, as Marx made money off the free market system, which he does, hates the free market system. The only thing is, Marx wasn't this touchy-feely progressive freethinker that Michael Moore thinks he is, that Michael Moore claims to be. Marx had no romantic illusions about the workers and about poor. He really had contempt for the poor and for the downtrodden, of course, because most of them under communist regimes are murdered. He even scolded people who tried to talk about some romantic illusions about helping the poor. Marx did have one, as far as we know, he did have a maid that was sort of a gift to when he got married, whom he impregnated. When he was living in London, one of his children starved to death. He wasn't a very good father. He wasn't a very good husband. And also, he was a vile racist and anti-Semite. And this is a side that the left the left, the left loves to accuse anybody and everyone who disagrees with them as being anti-Semitic, being racist. Some of the most vile anti-Semites are those in racist, are those on the left. Che Guevara was one. Che Guevara was a vile racist. Jack London was a racist. He probably wasn't as vile as most of them, but when Jack Johnson won the heavyweight champion, the first black man to hold that title, he thought it was a disgrace and wanted to have a great white hope to defeat him. So the left, well, and of course Planned Parenthood is was founded by a woman who was an anti-Semite and a racist. She even had a Nazi doctor, Ernest Rudin, write for her publication. So the left, there may be anti-Semites in the some conservative circles, and there may be some racists. But I would say that while the left doesn't have a monopoly on them, they got the share of them. And they still hold them as wonderful pillars of their movement, historical movement. So Marx actually wrote a book called A World Without Jews. And you can actually go and find it. It's not that expensive. I have a copy. I think it goes back to the 50s. So let me just read the back of it. Long available to the readers of Soviet Russia. And by the way, Stalin was another vile anti-Semite. Here is the first English translation in book form of the unexpurged papers of Karl Marx on the so-called Jewish question. Most of Marx's anti-Semitic diatribes were carefully eliminated by the translators and editors of his books, his journalistic writings, and his correspondence. Readers unfamiliar with this aspect of his thought will be startled to discover how well it has served the purposes of the totalitarian regimes of our time. It is consequently a subject upon which every member of a free society should be adequately informed. A fearless and illuminating critical introduction to this remarkable work has been provided by the eminent philosopher Dagobert D. Runes, R-U-N-E-S, and is published by the Philosophical Library, New York City. So I have a few copies I'm selling on our Amazon account, and he's another thing too that Marx used to say. He's one of his famous insults was to call somebody a Jew with Negro blood, and this is the vile man that folks like Michael Moore and college professors all over the world, especially here in the United States, love. Now, I have a copy of the Communist Manifesto in my hand here, and there's an incredible introduction by William Fall, someone whom I know, Bill Fall. He lives up in New Hampshire, but he actually wrote this particular version published by American Opinion, and it's still in print. You can go to you can get a hold of me because I have a whole bunch of these copies. It was published, I think, in the late 70s, this particular version. And William Fall gives us a nice little history of this vile character. And I think that's probably worth the cost of the booklet as it is. And then he goes into Marx didn't really have any original ideas. He was commissioned by a group called the League of the Just to put this together. And by the way, Marx was also an informant, a police informant. So he was a rat. He was a vile human being. He was a racist and anti-Semite. But hey, nobody's perfect. We all have our issues. And one of the things that a lot of people aren't familiar with, and I guess that maybe if you go to college you are, but if you are to college and haven't been in college, the 10 planks, and I'm just going to review them really quickly to see how many of these planks are installed today, not only in this country, but in other parts of the world, which they still refer to as the free world. Plank number one, abolition of property and land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. Does that sound like Agenda 21 to you? It certainly does to me. In fact, if somebody asked me, what's Agenda 21 in a nutshell, this is what I would tell them. I'd say read plank number one of the Communist Manifesto. How about this one, plank number two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Now, this was written in 1848. The United States, that became the 16th Amendment. And it took 50, 60, oh, maybe almost 70 years before we adopted that. But back in the 1890s and such, people, when they hear income tax, graduate income tax, they said, that's Marxism. That's wrong. But It became the law of the land. And of course, back when it was done, oh, it's just going to be a tiny percent of the most wealthiest people. Nothing to worry about, folks. Anytime a federal agent or a bureaucrat tells you nothing to worry about, that's when you start to worry. So we have that. Plank number three, abolition of all right of inheritance. Now, you can still die, and you can give your property, you know, so you can will it to people. Oh, but there's something called inheritance tax. And wouldn't you know that the inheritance tax came around about the same time that the 16th Amendment came around? And there are a lot of people, you know, when they, if you don't have a will or don't have the will probated or don't write it out properly, the inheritance tax wipes out a good chunk of that estate. So the family, the children, the wife, they don't get a whole lot. And of course, it depends on how that property is, you know, how that property is held. The real estate, you know, if you own a house, it's there's numerous ways to own property. And a lot of times these folks die, they don't bother writing out a will or writing out a proper will, and families have to pay through the nose through inheritance tax. And sometimes between the lawyers and the taxes, there's not much left. So that's plank number three. Plank number four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Well, we don't have a big problem with folks coming in, confiscating the property of people coming into the country. Or actually, in this case, leaving the country. You see, in most communist countries, socialist countries, when you leave the country, or they don't, you can't leave the country with more than, say, a few thousand dollars. And that's the situation in South Africa. These people are being massacred by the communists, the white farmers. And even when it was a white regime, some people wanted to leave, and they said, well, you can leave, but you got to leave your stuff here. And it goes to the government. Or rebels. Now, what's a rebel? What's a rebel? Well, you know, could it be somebody who is a constitutionalist? You know, somebody who's put in jail because of some violation of Agenda 21 policy? Happens all the time. There are people in jail right now. I interviewed a gentleman on the subject of Jerry Delimus. He was in helping out the people at the Bundy Ranch, and he's doing jail time right now. And you have entities at all levels seizing property, confiscating property. You have there was an infamous case in Pennsylvania where a fellow bought a piece of land. He was from a foreign country, Eastern Europe, came over here, American dream, got a business. His name eludes me, but in Tom DeWeese's most recent book, Sustainability, he mentions his case. The piece of property, I think he owned a some type of garage, auto body shop, but there was piles of junk, trash and tires and garbage, not garbage, but, you know, TV sets, old TV sets that created an artificial dam. Well, they cleaned it all out and he got permission from the state. They said, yeah, this is not right. This is good. You're doing this. The federal government went after him. They actually put him in jail. So, that issue is alive and well. How about this one here? Centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Well, we don't have that per se. We have something called the Federal Reserve Bank as Ed Griffin would say, it's a cartel. It's a federal and privately held cartel. So you got people at people at the U.S. government involved, as well as the private entity. Technically, the Fed is a private entity, but it's beyond. It simply prints money for the sake to monetize the debt. So it's not exactly totally installed, but it's partially installed. Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. Not entirely installed, but partially installed. We know that the government owns Amtrak. They have a lot of control at the federal level over the trucking industry, over many of the means of communication, as communication as well as taxes on communication. We know that the FCC, I know they're a big federal communications, and the owner of this station where this show originally airs can tell you a lot about that, the power that they exercise over the AM, FM stations and what have you. Try to get a TV station, try to set up your own AM station, FM station. It costs thousands of dollars to do that, to get a license, and it's all controlled by the feds at the state level, the feds. So it's partially installed. Extensions of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands, and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. It's interesting, though, the federal government creates the problem in the 30s. What they did was back, you know, more than well over 100 years ago, they gave, so many acres. They allowed people to go out and graze the land, or here's some land they gave them, you know, homesteading. But it wasn't enough land to adequately graze cattle, so they had to use public lands, and the public lands were destroyed. That's what created the dust bowls. And then they come by and they say, we're going to create to solve the problem. So we know that the government, federal government, does have a lot of, they do a lot of production owned by the state. So that, again, it's not fully installed, but it's partially installed. Equal liability of all to labor, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Well, during the New Deal era, they had this. Roosevelt set up these entities. They had, by the way, so did Hitler and so did Stalin. But that was the National Labor Recovery Act, and they included these, what was it called? There was an act, NRA, National Recovery Act. And they hired people to do a lot of make-work projects, WPA, Work Projects Act, I think it was. And if you recall, Obama, in one of his speeches, said he wanted to have a civilian entity as powerful, and he said as powerful as the U.S. military. Well, he didn't quite get that, thankfully. So, and I would say that Obama knows more about the Communist Manifesto than he knows about the Constitution. Combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country. Well, that's happening by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. So here we're talking about distributing the population resettlement. We see people from other parts of the world being resettled here in the United States. Agenda 21, that is another that's happening. The county where this show originates, Arista County, in the early 70s, had well over 100,000 people. It's lost over 30% of its population in the last 40 years. And some has to do with just things that are that are market driven, but a lot of it isn't market driven. And when you take land, in fact, just a little south of Arista County, you have a large tract of land, forest, that was purchased by the owner of Burt's Bees, and she gave it to the federal government. It's called a national monument, and it's a violation of the National Monuments Act, or what was it called, 1903. There was an act that where if there was a historical event somewhere, you know, that it could be preserved, and it certainly didn't mean acres and acres of land. So that's an example of so that's happening. Then this one, the 10th plank, this is one I really like to explain to people. Free education for all children in public schools. Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form. Didn't say it was against it, just in its present form. Combination of education with industrial production, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't it interesting? What's this, et cetera, et cetera? Well, we have public schools, but this was published in 1848. In the 1840s, Horace Mann was trying to carry out Karl Marx's work by getting states to pass compulsory education laws. And within probably 30 or 40 years, every state, just about every state, had these laws. And, of course, we all know there's no free education, that someone has to pay for it, the taxpayer. But it also implied that the state, or in this case, a country, controls education. Well, of course, that the whole idea of government education is for the people to learn the perspective or the worldview of a statist, in this case, Marxist. And this is what happened to our public schools. Our public schools, I'd call them in government indoctrination centers. There's some good teachers here and there. And now with Common Core, it puts the nail in the coffin. But so our public schools are really arms of the federal government doing the bidding of the socialist All you have to do is look. Just recently, I think Trump was some event that was giving an award to the Teacher of the Year. And this teacher was a hardcore leftist. These are the kinds of people you want your children around. But in a free country where there's you can have private education, you can homeschool. And by the way, Marx was very much against homeschooling. He wanted to see that eliminated. He mentions it in the Communist Manifesto. He also says this, too. So those are the 10 planks I just reviewed. He does say there's right the page right before the 10 planks. He says this. There are besides eternal truths, such as freedom, justice, etc., that are common to all states of society. But communism abolishes eternal truths. It abolishes all religion and all morality. Instead of constituting them on a new basis, it therefore acts in contradiction to all past historical experience. This is a disgusting degenerate. He says that we have to abolish eternal truths. And he did say, by the way, that religion was the opiate of the masses. I wonder what I would say that socialism is the opiate of the elite. So he was an atheist. He wanted to abolish eternal truths. It was interesting. There are a lot of people who call themselves Christians that buy into this nonsense. They try to tell you that Jesus was some kind of socialist. And there's some parts of scripture that if you look at it at first glance, it may imply that. But, you know, you look at the Ten Commandments, you know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's stuff, his wife, his maidservant, what have you. Well, that means that that neighbor may have more stuff than you, and you're not supposed to lust for that stuff or desire that stuff or have envy over that person's success, you see. And the parable of the talent where there were three men. There was the master, and he had three servants, and the man who got the one talent and didn't do anything, he just buried it and didn't invest it, didn't make any more money. He took it and he gave it to the man who had the more talents because he was wise in how he used it. So no, Christianity is not socialism. There is Christians have an obligation to take care of people, but that doesn't mean we have to be. That's something you do out of obligation, not over a law of forced redistribution. And that's where the socialists get it. They simply want to pass laws against people who produce. There's an old adage that when you tax something, you get less of it, and when you subsidize something, you get more of it, and that's what we see in our country. And our country's policies, for the most part, are to punish people who are successful and reward people who are failures, and that's part of Marxism and this idea of we have to force redistribute the wealth. Bernie Sanders is a hardcore Marxist. Communist. He honeymooned in the Soviet Union during the height of the Cold War. And how popular he is, you know, and he doesn't make any bones about it. You know, if you said he was a communist, he'd say thank you. He considered it a compliment. So I do encourage people to read this or who are listening, and you can just go online and download it. It's only about 40 pages, just depending on the size of the print. And Marx, by the way, didn't know anything about economics, didn't have any original thoughts. Engels was the man who funded him, and Engels got his money mainly from capitalism. And by the way, I don't like the word capitalism. That's something that Marx, I know of, it was he that created it. I believe in a free market, and free market capitalism. I believe in free. I used to like to use the word free market. Because the word capitalism is supposed to have has an ugly connotation. You think of capitalism, you think greedy people. And you want to hear about greed? You know, Bernie Sanders was appealing to the young people saying, I'm going to give you free college. Oh, you mean I don't have to work for it? I don't have to get a loan? I don't have to pay back that loan? I'm going to get free college. Wow. Isn't that greedy? I mean, Bernie Sanders didn't say to, hey, Hal, I'm going to give you a new car. I'm going to pay your mortgage for the next 5 years. I'm going to just say to your creditors, well, thankfully, I don't have too many of them, Hal's not going to pay you back because he voted for me. See, that would be appealing to my greed, wouldn't it? But he appeals to the young people, and they think, oh, he's great. Oh, Bernie's cool. You'll feel the burn. Well, you'd feel a burn, right, if this country completely goes into socialism. You'll be burnt, all right. You lose your job. You lose your freedoms and your liberty. There is another book that I want to discuss in the next 5 minutes. I call it The Answer to the Communist Manifesto. It's called The Law. The Law was written by a French statesman in 1850. He died not too long afterwards. And this book is still in print. And it's interesting, too, because and it's another book that's only, it's only about 50 or 60 pages. And it's, again, just the opposite of the Communist Manifesto. And it's still in print. It's, in French and numerous languages. And you can download this free. Just go online and put in The Law by Frederick. It's Frederic Bastiat, Bastiat. Had an interesting experience. My daughter, Georgia, who she just graduated from college. But a couple of years ago, she had a professor whom I think was very open-minded. I'm assuming he was a liberal, but an open-minded one, and they do exist. And anyway, I suggested that she give him a copy of The Law, and she did. And initially, the professor said, oh, well, I'll take a look at it. I said, just say it's his. He can keep it. And so he actually, not only did he take a look at it, he became a real fan of Frederick Bastiat and started sharing the book to his with his colleagues. But one of the things Bastiat said here, he talks about the legal plunder, and he defines it by saying it's something that the government does that if you did it, it'd be a crime. In other words, income tax, progressive income tax, and what have you. And then he used the term socialism as legal plunder. And it's a wonderful little essay. So I had to say it's just the opposite of the manifesto. The last chapter, he talks about a visitor that comes upon this primitive tribe, and a child is born. And the witch doctor wants to stretch out his earlobes and do something there, and someone else wants to put something in his lips and do all these terrible things to make this child grow. And the man says, stop. He said, what God has done is good enough. Let this person grow, with wisdom because of experience and so forth. And I said, this idea of this poor little kid being worked on by all of these quacks in his village, that sounds like Hillary's village, isn't it? It takes a village to raise a child. That's Hillary's village. So, yeah, I recommend The Law, and I also recommend reading the Communist Manifesto. And I would, if your children are going to a college and they bring this thing home, point these things out to them. Point these things out about the 10 planks, and also this idea that communism abolishes eternal truths. I mean, abolishing something that's true, this isn't just crazy. This is satanic. It's absolutely satanic. And it's my opinion that Marx knew exactly what he was doing. And it's just a shame that this has not been widely rejected. Instead, it's being accepted by far too many people. That's what I want to say. So we got another minute left. So I just want to thank you for listening. And I do thank you for indulging me with my cough. I've had it for the last 4 weeks. I'm getting over it, but it hasn't gone away completely. These upper respiratory viral infections, you can only, just the worst one I've ever had. So, again, you can hear the show on WBCQ The Planet every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Friday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and on YouTube and on Podomatic. So with that, I want to thank you for listening, and until next week, may God bless you. Thank you.